Today on Maine Calling, getting around with a disability in Maine. Imagine navigating Maine in a wheelchair or with a cane, in the snow and ice, on the cobblestones of Portland, on sidewalks damaged by frost heaves. Maine can be a tough place to navigate if you have a disability, and not just for those with mobility challenges. It's difficult to get around with other kinds of disabilities too, such as visual impairment or a developmental disability. I'm Jennifer Rooks. For 2025, Maine Calling introduces a new year-long series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. Our first show examines transportation and accessibility issues. All of the programs in the disability series, including this one, will be live streamed with an ASL interpreter on Maine Public's YouTube channel and the Maine Calling Facebook page. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn, and by Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today is the first show in our series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. We start by covering the topic of transportation and accessibility, the challenges and solutions for people with disabilities to get around in Maine. Joining me for the hour, Kim Moody, who is Executive Director of Disability Rights Maine, Sarah Squires, Public Policy Director for Disability Rights Maine, and Will Gale, Assistant Director of the Bureau of Planning with the Maine Department of Transportation. Today's show is being live streamed on Maine Public's YouTube channel and on Maine Calling's Facebook page, along with ASL interpretation. We would love you to join the conversation. You may send us an email, a brief email, please, talk@mainepublic.org. Find us on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. I'll repeat that, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us and being here as we kick off this, really what I hope is a very important and meaningful series. Kim, I'm going to start with you, and not with a transportation question, but with a broader question. I'd like some perspective on who we're talking about when we say people with disabilities. That is a large percentage of people in Maine, isn't it?
It certainly is, Jennifer. I think probably that the population is about 25% of the population are people with disabilities. We know that anything can happen to our bodies, or we can just be born with some sort of a difference. And all of those things are called disabilities. And so I generally think it means that there's some things that we cannot do, but moreover, we're perceived as unable to do certain things. You've probably heard the term or the phrase, attitudes are the real disability. And what we mean by that is the way that society looks at us, looks at people with disabilities, really is what is disabling to us. But having done this job, an advocate for people with disabilities for 38 years, I'm also a realist. And so our disabilities can and do impact our lives. That's what I mean by that. And that's why we have laws, because we are discriminated against. And I know that we're not talking about transportation yet, but I'm glad you picked this as the first issue in this series, because it is huge. It probably is the best example of what can negatively impact people with disabilities. And we're not talking about all people with disabilities. I have a car, Sarah has a car, but so there's a significant subset of people who just can't get around. People with physical disabilities who cannot drive due to that disability, people with seizure disorders, visual impairments, people who are blind, people with psychiatric labels who have been unable to get a license, people with intellectual or developmental disabilities. And then, like you mentioned, there's all the people who could drive but then lost their license due to vision deterioration or a seizure disorder or cognitive decline. And then one more thing, that the real intersection, I've talked to you about this before, the intersection between poverty and disability unfortunately remains high. And so there's hundreds of people who cannot drive because they cannot afford it. So getting around in the state of Maine for people with disabilities is really tough. There are hundreds of people residing in group homes, and oftentimes they are housebound, just as there are hundreds of people living all over this state in rural Maine who can't get anywhere because the transportation systems just are not available.
And I'm thinking, Kim, as you say this, as you talk about the link between disability and poverty, if somebody can't get to a job, they can't work, and they can't bring themselves out of this rotten cycle.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Sarah, when people hear about transportation problems for people with disabilities, they might think of someone in a wheelchair. And this is what Kim is bringing up, this point, is that there are so many reasons there would be challenges. Give us maybe some, walk us through what a day might be like for somebody with a seizure disorder or with a visual impairment trying to get around. Put it into perspective for those people who are not dealing with those issues.
Thank you, Jennifer. I think, well, as Kim said, you know, disability and poverty often go hand in hand. So, you know, individuals who are lower income, maybe receiving Social Security benefits, may qualify for MaineCare. And MaineCare has a non-emergency transportation system that enables individuals to access medical appointments or any sort of service that's covered by MaineCare. But that's all it does. It just gets you to your medical needs. It doesn't allow you to get out of the house for recreational purposes, to participate in community events, to engage with friends or family. It's very limiting. And so if you're not able to drive, and you receive you receive MaineCare and you're able to access transportation in one area, it's that only that one area that you're able to sort of experience any sort of independence, and everything else is restricting. And that's compounded by the fact that Maine is not known for its robust transportation network. And even the cities and towns that have, you know, there are places where that they have cobbled together some sort of local transportation, but that's not true for probably 90% of Maine. And so the more rural you are, the more secluded you are, the more restricted you are from engaging in any sort of activity. And so that's, I mean, it's very isolating.
Well, and I just have to say, I'm sorry, but Jennifer, that Sarah mentioned the non-emergency transportation system that we have. We at Disability Rights Maine get hundreds of complaints about it. It's a nice idea, but it has serious flaws. So for example, just one of them is that if you are a person with a psychiatric label or mental illness and you live in a group home, they won't come to pick you up because they say that that group home has a van. And that van is not for taking people to their emergency appointments. I mean, some of the complaints we get are really scary, like someone in a crisis residential center. So they're in a crisis, but the van won't come take them to their methadone clinic appointment. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, Sarah, but I just wanted to make sure that people understand that that system is very flawed for people.
Yeah, and Sarah's point is even when it's working, it's not about the grocery store or church or something like that. It's just medical appointments. Will, I want to bring you into the conversation and talk about the role of the Department of Transportation in seeing that people with disabilities are able to access public transportation. What is the MDOT able to offer, and what are the limitations?
Well, thank you for hosting the series. This is an important one, and obviously transportation is at the core of what we do. In terms of how Maine DOT is looking at this issue or how we approach it, I think there are just a couple things I want to highlight here. at a very high level, we're roughly 35 years into the Americans with Disabilities Act. So we are continuing to build progress into making a lot of those connections that Kim and Sarah had talked about in terms of on our making accessible connections for folks to use who may or may not have the ability to drive. At a very high level, I just wanted to also emphasize that we recently completed a series of long-range transportation plans. We have our long-range transportation plan, which is setting the overall kind of policy and direction of the department. One of the key pillars of that is, one of our guiding pillars of that is to meet our customers where they are. And so we want to ensure when we're making transportation decisions that we're providing equitable solutions to our stakeholders and the diverse set of transportation users on our network. As part of that family of plans, we have a couple plans, the active transportation plan on our main transit plan. I think a question about what we provide in terms of transit services. We work very closely with our transit operators throughout the state to not only ensure that they're being ADA compliant with bus purchases, but we're also working closely with them for transit stops. Any improvements that they make to the transit stops is one area that we're really trying to focus on, that we outline in our active transportation plan as a key strategy of working with the providers, with public works.
So when you say transit, with the exception of the Amtrak mm-hmm. down east, or you're talking about buses, making sure that buses and vans, not only are the buses and vans ADA accessible, maybe have a lift, yep. but also that the stop is. It doesn't really work, if the bus has got a lift, but the stop doesn't have a curb cut, right?
Exactly. And it's critically important, too, to work with our partners in municipalities and public works to ensure that there's access year-round to those transit stops. I think we probably have seen too many examples of a plow pushes snow and it impedes the ability for folks to get on or off at a bus stop. So, that's one area of focus that we're trying to work with our partners to help address on that aspect of it.
Kim, anybody who's studied public policy has learned about the curb cut principle and the fact that you do something, and the principle is that if you do something for one group of people, it benefits all kinds of people. That back when curb cuts began to be a thing 50 years ago in the United States, that they were made for people in wheelchairs, but suddenly everybody was using them. People with strollers, people using a cane, people walking with small children. And I'm wondering if you... wanted to build on that idea and talk about why this is not a conversation about a very narrow group of people.
Yes, that is exactly the point. The improvements that we're making that are directly related to ADA are not just improvements for the disability community. They're improvements for everybody. They make roadways safer, easier to cross. They make public transit easier to be accessible for folks who want to go to the grocery store, who have children. These are improvements that are really setting the foundation of a transportation system as we move forward. So I think it's also important, I think Kim had mentioned this as well, but I think it's important to recognize too that the community, a lot of us as we age, are potentially going to be aging and become a member of the disability community as we grow older. And so it's important that we have a transportation system that's able to accommodate everybody for whatever use they need.
Sarah, I understand that you just got a new vehicle that is fairly accessible. And tell me about that. Tell me why you needed a new vehicle and what kind of adaptations and how it's changed your life.
So I needed a new vehicle for a very normal reason. My transmission died in my old vehicle. So I had no choice but to go through this process again. And I ended up purchasing a Honda CR-V, which has modifications that include pedal extenders, a raised seat so I can see out the window, a smaller diameter steering wheel.
Okay, you said pedal extenders because you are a little person.
I'm a 3.5 feet tall. Obviously something to raise up to see out the window and then reach the pedals. An adapter for the gear shift because I don't have the arm length to reach it. And then I use a motorized scooter for distances, so the vehicle had to be large enough to accommodate putting the scooter in and out without having to disassemble it. And so that was a process that began Veterans Day 2023 and ended on Halloween 2024. And so for
Almost a
that
year.
duration, almost a year, not that I'm counting, but it was a, very difficult and involved process that I think, although I'm lucky because I've been through it before and because, this is my job, I'm familiar with the systems, it was still complicated and involved a lot of juggling of different programs and agencies, a lot of patience, and a lot of frustration.
Do you think there are people, you said, juggling a lot of programs and a lot of agencies? I'm sure it's very expensive. And I'm wondering if there are people out there who qualify for modifications for a vehicle and qualify for programs and either don't know about them or think, oh my gosh, this is just going to be too much work. What would you say to them?
I'd say, it is expensive. I mean, my modifications were almost as much as the vehicle. So there are programs that exist. I went through Alpha One. Administers Maine's Adaptive Equipment Loan Program, which has a vehicle loan program for people with disabilities who need modified vehicles to access their community and get their independent live independently. And it's a great program that has really, helpful repayment terms. But, to be honest, it's also an invasive program. I mean, it took. It's not the same as getting a loan from your dealership. It's, it required a lot of background information about my financials and my ability to repay my credit, and much more so than if I'd gone through a bank. And were it not for the repayment terms, I'm not sure I would have done it because it just felt as though I were being put more through a process. But having said that, it really is beneficial. And if you do need the assistance to obtain a vehicle, that this is a program that will help. But it only pays for the vehicle. I went through Maine's Department of Labor, Division of Vocational Rehabilitation for assistance with the modifications themselves because my vehicle is necessary for work. I could access state funds. Unfortunately, there's not a lot out there that pays for the modifications aside from VR. A lot of vehicle manufacturers have reimbursement programs if you need to modify your vehicle, but the amount is nominal compared to what a lot of people need. I mean, like I said, there are these programs that are in place, but they're very niche. And, coordinating the work can also be a challenge. I kind of had to do the vehicle process in reverse. I had to know my vehicle, have my vehicle selected and essentially held by the dealership before I could apply for the loan and then before I could get it modified. So it wasn't until I bought the vehicle, had it modified, and all ready to go did I actually test drive it. So a lot of it's on faith, too. And yeah, so.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're at the other end of that journey and that you have it now, Sarah.
As am I.
We're talking about transportation and disability on Maine Calling. If you'd like to join the conversation, send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We're talking about how people with disabilities in Maine face challenges when it comes to getting from place to place and what some solutions and resources are. My guest, Will Gale, Assistant Director of Planning with the Maine Department of Transportation. From Disability Rights Maine, Sarah Squires, who's Public Policy Director, and Kim Moody, Executive Director. A reminder that this program can be viewed live on Maine Public's YouTube channel and Maine Calling's Facebook page with an ASL interpreter. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before the break, Kim, Sarah was talking about a couple organizations she worked with for her vehicle, Alpha One and the Department of Labor. And I'm wondering if there are any others that you would like to put out there for people who are hoping to improve their transportation situation, whether it's by having a vehicle adapted or whether it's by making sure that there's some sort of a public transportation in your area.
No, Jennifer, I'm sorry. I wish I could give you a whole list of places that people could call or go to in order to access transportation. But the reality is, and you picked this topic for your first show. It's really a serious problem for people. You can't get out to get groceries, never mind go to the movies.
Are there places in Maine that are better than others? Are there places that people who know that they're going to live with a disability for most of their life or all of their life will move because it's just a little easier than somewhere else? Or is it hard everywhere? Sarah?
I mean, I think, sure, people will move to like the Portland area or Lewiston, Auburn, because the idea is that the more, Maine's version of metropolitan areas will have transportation networks. But at the same time, as we know, the cost of living has increased, it's skyrocketed. And so moving to Portland, where there could theoretically be, the metro or something to get you from A to B, is not financially feasible for individuals with disability because they're on a fixed income. Housing assistance is hard to come by. Waiting lists are years long. And so they're forced to live in more remote, affordable communities, which means that they can't get from A to B.
Yeah, and Will, we think about people who live in places. I've thought about this issue when I'm visiting Washington, D.C., and you're on the metro, and there's an elevator, and there's really no difference in height between the platform and the train. And obviously, Maine does not have a subway system. But can we do better, especially in Portland and Augusta and Bangor? And what would it take?
Sure. So it just acknowledging that, yes, this is a big issue, mobility, right? And we are trying to address it. And I think that there's a couple recent policies that we've enacted to help with that. We're working hard to improve ADA accessibility, and two items that I think are gonna help advance that. We just recently finalized a new complete streets policy. And what that does is it's going to look at how we support a multimodal connections when we do infrastructure projects. So what that means is if we're paving or we're looking at a road improvement, who are the users that are going to be using that roadway, and how can we make things not only ADA accessible, but improve safety, areas of opportunity for transit stops. And that is something that we have now internally developed a checklist for any new project that we're going to be doing. So those are kind of immediate policy implementation items that we've been doing. But it is a lot of work. A lot of our transportation network was built prior to the ADA. And so we have a lot of work to go, but we are investing in any new paving project, any new project that we put forward. We're ensuring ADA compliance to the maximum extent feasible that we're able to do that. It's a big lift. There's a lot of need.
I'm going to go to Paul, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for covering this really, really important topic that just doesn't get enough attention. My name is Paul Drinan. I'm the Active Transportation Director at the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and we'd really like your listeners to know that even though our name is Bicycle Coalition, we are committed to safe mobility for all, and that's all with a capital A. We're here to act as a resource for people who may be experiencing mobility challenges in their community, and we do that by offering education, advocacy, and best practices information to decision makers and others like elected officials, municipal employees, community stakeholders. We'll help people conduct walk audits to inform the complete streets policies that your guest just mentioned. So we're here as a resource. We can be reached at bikemaine.org. Thank you.
Paul, thanks so much for calling in and talking about the resource that Bike Maine is. I want to also read a Facebook post. This is from Maine's Assistive Technology Program. As Maine's Assistive Technology Program, we're frequently contacted by people from all over the state who are looking for adapted vehicles, ramps, and funding for transportation needs. And says listeners can go to our website, Maine Site, C-I-T-E, MaineSite.org. And they mentioned training archives, free webinar, getting into the driver's seat 2024, driver assessment services in Maine. So everything mentioned today on this program will be also on our webpage and Facebook page and in our newsletter. But thank you so much for that comment. We're going to go now to Rachel Fogg. Rachel is a ski school instructor and a person with epilepsy. Thank you so much for calling in, Rachel.
You're welcome.
Tell us about some of the challenges you've had to overcome as a person with epilepsy.
Primarily it's transportation, getting anywhere, to doctor appointments, to getting groceries, getting to work, anything. I am so dependent on friends, family at times, coworkers, you name it. Anything but what sources are being spoken about today, because from what I have had to reach out and experience and fight for like crazy, I can't obtain at all. It is a problem in rural Maine greatly. We are overlooked tremendously. It is a pain in the butt. It's hard to even believe the Americans with Disability Act covers us.
Yeah, and you mentioned you're a ski school instructor, so I'm guessing you probably live in western Maine, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, so do you feel as though it's even more difficult where you are than in Maine's cities and towns?
Beyond belief, yes. It's horrible. There's no nice way to describe it. I've reached out to all sorts of people, all sorts of organizations, Susan Collins, and everybody that I've reached out to, trying to find a way to get to doctor appointments, to grocery shop, anything. Anything that I need to leave my house for that's a distance away does not exist. It's just horrible, and it's either because of budgeting, they don't cover the area, we're overlooked in that area, you name it, I've faced it. It's just insane because it's like I don't even qualify for assistance with Maine Care anymore because of my age and my marital status. I'm under Medicare, so I'm not covered under that program. So that's another problem that's getting overlooked.
Mm. Rachel, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you like to see happen where you live? What would help you in your life and others who live in your community?
People to wake up and realize how fortunate they are to have a driver's license, to help out the nonprofits that do exist in the area that do offer rides to doctor appointments and whatnot, and also people to wake up and realize that there are many of us that have disabilities that we can't just go to the local doctors. We have to go a great distance. We have to go down to, like, Scarborough. So what's the limitations that exist for some of these organizations that could cover the area if they had enough people volunteering? It's still not going to work because it goes beyond their limits of what they will drive.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experience. I wish I could wave a magic wand and make it better for you. Before you go, though, Will Gale from Maine DOT would like to say something. Go ahead, Will.
Yeah, I was just going to touch on that aspect of it. And Sarah, you had brought this up earlier, just in terms of the complexity and, you know, frankly, the bureaucratic mess and nightmare it seems to take for folks to get a ride somewhere. And there are a lot of federal rules about what what constitutes a trip with one pot of funding versus another pot of funding, that is a real nightmare for folks that we've just heard about. One thing that we at MaineDOT are exploring in partnership with Department of Health and Human Services is how can we better integrate these types of trips with other trips, right? So you can go to your doctor's appointment, you can go to the pharmacy at the grocery store and go to the grocery store rather than having a bureaucratic mess of, well, you're allowed to go to the pharmacy, but you can't actually go, you can't pick up groceries. So we're focusing and trying to tear down some of those as much as we can, and given the tools that we have available to us. But that is a huge, huge issue.
Rachel, again, thank you for calling in. Rachel Fogg, a ski instructor in person with epilepsy. We'll go to Portland and Zoe. Hi, Zoe. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks so much for putting me on the call. This is a great conversation. I'm the executive director with a statewide coalition called the Moving Maine Network. And our focus is really on amplifying the voice of people who can't drive and those who struggle to afford transportation. So, you know, our work is about bringing in the policies and really the investments that are needed to bring about better transportation access. So I would just love to invite, you know, everyone out there who, you know, has something to say about this issue and cares about making it better to check out our website at movingmaine.org and get involved with our efforts. You know, we really take the approach of we want to build community amongst the people who care about this. And, you know, there are solutions. They are complicated. I think there's a lot of great work going on in communities. And so, you know, our hope is that by bringing people together to solve problems like Mainers are really good at, you know, that we can make this issue better. But we do think we need to raise awareness that it's a lot more people who experience transportation barriers than most people realize. You know, some estimates is that it's 1 in 3 Mainers who don't drive. That's a lot of Mainers. So we want to make that better for folks. Thank you so much for talking about this issue.
Zoe, thank you so much for calling in. And the reality, isn't it, Sarah? She says, for people who don't drive in Maine, it's driving. We're talking about driving. A few people in a couple communities can get around on the bus, but it's not really a way of life.
I also want to say that, you know, sometimes people think, you know, we'll just ask friends or family. You know, I can't, you know, your neighbor take you or not. And that's very rarely a solution. I mean, when I went my year without a vehicle, one of the things that was probably really crucial for me was the fact that I'm able to work from home, that I didn't have to worry about a way to get to and from the office each day. And on the days that I did go to the office, I had really incredible coworkers who were stepped up and offered to help me get back and forth or get to offsite meetings. But, you know, for many people, they don't, you know, if you're low income and you have family that's also low income or friends, I mean, your network, your close community people may not also have a vehicle. And those that do, you know, like Rachel said, when you're living in, you know, Western Maine, you're having to travel long distances to access care. And so people may not want to put that wear and tear on their vehicle and stuff. And so it's just sort of like the lack of transportation just sort of permeates everything.
We have an email from Pamela. Regarding dealing with people who have disabilities, quote, we are all temporarily abled. And Kim, I know that's a little off topic for today's conversation, but I know it's something that you feel strongly about.
Well, yeah, I absolutely think that's true. You never know when disability could hit. I mean, it's a little aside from that, and I mentioned earlier that we, as disabled people, we say to the rest of you, there's nothing we cannot do. And And like I said earlier, sometimes that's not true, like with transportation. But yes, we are all the rest of you are temporarily abled, right? I agree with that statement. And I'm very glad that Zoe called in too. I'm so glad to learn about Moving Maine, and we definitely want to work with them. So thanks for that.
We're talking about disability and transportation in Maine, a big topic. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today's program is the beginning of a series we're doing this year, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. Today we're learning about getting around with a disability, transportation, a big issue. Joining me, Kim Moody and Sarah Squires, both with Disability Rights Maine, and Will Gale with the Maine Department of Transportation. If you're quick, you can try to share a comment or question with a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, or call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Lots of calls coming in. Hopefully you can get through. Joining us now, Rosanna Belanger, who is board chair for Speaking Up For Us, an organization run by and for people with developmental disabilities. Thanks so much for calling in, Rose.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what kind of disability you live with.
So, I personally do not have any physical disabilities, but I have emotional and developmental disabilities. I deal with a bunch of different things. But personally, I don't let my disabilities control me and what I can and cannot do. But it's still a challenge.
Rose, as you know, we're talking about transportation today. Talk about the challenges that you and those that you advocate with face. What kind of challenges do you face when it comes to transportation?
So I live in Aroostook County, and I have challenges to even go to events for Speaking Up For Us. And being the chair, that's my responsibility to be there. So, for instance, yesterday was a disability awareness in Augusta, and I did not have transportation to go down. I would have had to take in the SEER bus from Presque Isle to Bangor, and then the Concord bus from Bangor to Augusta. And if I did that yesterday, I would have missed the event completely. And that would have meant that I'd have to go down on Monday instead. So wanting to go to this event was a big deal for me. But because of the fact that I had to pay out of pocket all the expenses for getting down there and even possibly getting a hotel room, I know that Speaking Up For Us would have reimbursed me, but there was no way I could go. And that really made me upset, actually, because this is important. And there are other people here in Aroostook County that have to deal with not being able to take a taxi because it can be expensive. And that's really hard. I have a friend who is actually blind, so she has to have someone with her a lot of the time. But there is a transportation system that we have up here in Aroostook County. It is called Aroostook Regional Transportation System, ARTS bus for short. And I love them. So, and I actually pay about $3 for 2 stops. So that just for in town where I live, which is amazing, but it doesn't run on Sundays. So they run during the week from Monday to Friday, and they now got a grant so that they can have people take the bus on Saturdays, but there's certain stops that they take. And I live in a government HUD-based building for people who have disabilities and elderly. And the manager of my building is not allowing SARS bus to come to my building because, well, I don't know, they're just being difficult at times. But I still have a hard time getting around, and there's a lot of people that do.
Rose, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experience, and we will put the information about Speaking Up for Us on our website and Facebook page. Thank you so much for calling. Rose Belanger is with Speaking Up for Us, which is based in Presque Isle. We're going to go now. Let's see. We will go to Michael, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Well, hello. I loved your show, and I really, really appreciate the time that you will have for me. My only comment is I am disabled. And I don't know if I'm putting a plug here, but I need to get my car serviced. And freaking Casco Bay Ford is going to pick up my car tomorrow, service in and bring back my car. So I want, it's a plug made, but
Michael, I so appreciate it. And I think what you're saying is that how much you appreciate the service that your car dealership is bringing to you, that maybe we, maybe other businesses, the rest of us think about how much something like that matters. Yes?
My goodness, dear. Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you for calling in, Michael. Michael calling in from Freeport. We'll go up to St. George and Patricia. Hi, Patricia. Go ahead.
Hello. What a heart tug this show is. We lived in Aroostook County for 20 years, and I can relate to the young lady that was up there. But now down in St. George, which is Wiley's Corner, Tenants Harbor, Martinsville, Port Clyde, not to be confused with Lake St. George. And we have here something called St. George Neighbor to Neighbor, which is run by volunteers. And you can call to get a ride, and they say, where do you need to go? Grocery store, pickup or delivery, library, doctors, visit a friend, club, gym, or performance. And oh, if just so many more of our communities would pull together to give this kind of service.
Patricia, thank you so much for your call. I think we may have a similar call from Peter calling from York. Hi, York. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Yes, it was interesting to hear that person. Here in York, we have a service called Heart to Heart. It was founded by the retired president of York Hospital, Judd Knox, and we have about 35 volunteers that we've signed up over the last few years who provide rides to anyone who calls the York number. We schedule the calls, date and time, and they can go anywhere, pretty much Portsmouth and Dover and anywhere up towards Kennebunk. And We do about 65 or 70 rides a week, which means every driver gets maybe two rides a week, whatever they wish to volunteer for. It's all free. The volunteers do not get paid. And we now have over 400 people signed up as riders and almost 400 destinations that we are on our list that we go to.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for being a part of that organization. Sarah, can you talk about what organizations like this mean to people?
I think they mean the world. I mean, to people that have it, organizations and services like this grant people with disabilities and all people who have difficulty accessing transportation independence that they wouldn't otherwise have, a sense of community, and also the knowledge that people out there want to help, that they want to volunteer, you know, dedicate their time is, I mean, I can't really put a word to it, but I think it's just phenomenal that there are people that out there that want to do this and that take this upon themselves, recognizing the void and feeling the need to fill it. I think it's great.
We, on the other end of the spectrum, we have two emails about government bureaucracy and regulations. An email from Carl. Back in 2018, I drove a bus for the Portland Metro. The Metro just expanded service in Westbrook. Prior to starting service, federal regulations required the Metro to construct a short 15-foot-long sidewalk to nowhere at each bus stop. Each short sidewalk cost about $15,000. I never picked up a person in a wheelchair on that route with the short sidewalks to nowhere. The buses have ramps that extend out to allow wheelchairs to access to the bus. A paved driveway entrance would have been sufficient. Regulations impose artificial hurdles that prevent bus service expansion to more rural areas. So basically saying the money could have been better spent to reach more people. And then an email from Wendy. I benefit from a local age-friendly SACO nonprofit who provides rides to medical appointments. The appointments temporarily impact my vision. I'm willing to return the ride, giving service as a volunteer. Insurance and gas costs are stopping me from being another driver. I don't doubt I'm alone. However, this is a government issue. So, Will, this is the kind of thing that you're trying to untangle every day.
That's right. One item that potentially can help with this is we recently received some funding from the Federal Transit Administration for a grant to pilot a one-click, one-call mobility app for folks in York County. So we're partnering with York County Community Action Corporation to pilot this, and hopefully we can get a lot of good information, roll that out to help with the numerous amounts of folks and uniting transportation services so that people can more easily get to where they need to go.
I think we have time for another call or two. We'll try Rena and Hollowell. Hi, Rena, go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I live 3 miles round trip from the state house complex. I went yesterday. I tell everybody I'm old, senile, and crotchety. I never thought I use a walker. I never thought that I had a disability until yesterday. A friend drove me there. We parked in this cross building parking lot with a handicapped place. I could not push my walker through the snow that had not been shoveled to get to the sidewalk. It took a great deal of effort. And while I have neuropathy on my hands, it would really set me off for a bad start of the day. But it all goes back to money, and I understand the transportation's problem. But if one out of three do not drive, it seems to me that more money ought to go to us. It's the ferries that cost so much, the people that live, and that's money for the people that come for the summer on the islands.
Rena, I so appreciate your call. We're almost out of time, but Will Gale, when you say more money, when Rena says more money, I think you're probably saying, yes, please.
Yep, and it's also about how we're spending our money on that as well. So we need to ensure mobility for everybody, and that impacts quality of life, as we've been talking about.
Well, thank you all for being here, and I apologize to those whose calls and questions we were not able to get to. An hour is an hour. The voice you just heard, Will Gale, Assistant Director of Planning with the Maine Department of Transportation. Also with us, with Disability Rights Maine, Kim Moody, the Executive Director, and Sarah Squires, Public Policy Director. Thank you to our ASL interpreter, Julia Schaefer. Today's sound engineer was Jess Miller. We had help from Nick Godfrey. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we'll learn about plant-based diets, history, and current trends. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.